everyone. I'm Derek.
Oh my god.
Welcome to Screen Heroes.
My lovely co-host.
You are my loveliest co-host.
Oh, that is
You are my regular co-host.
Welcome to Screen Heroes
episode. High fiber.
Welcome to Screen Heroes episode 110. I'm Derek. This is Ryan and Ray.
Hello.
Hi.
And we are here to review Ready Player One, the movie, not the book, but I'm sure we'll talk a bit about the book. We are also going to talk some news, and we have some housekeeping items to discuss before we kick things off as well. So thank you for those who are tuning in live on Twitch. Ray, why don't you tell everybody about the big MCU tournament we have going on?
Okay, so just for fun, we're doing kind of a March Madness in April bracket for the MCU films. Go ahead and pick your favorite every single day, which one you think is the best movie. Every day there are new mashups against each other, and you can choose which one you want on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. So you can go check those out now. The polls only last for a day, so try to get your vote in as soon as you can. And we'll announce which film wins everything right before, I guess, Infinity War happens.
Yeah, we are kind of sending updated brackets as we finish each round.
Yeah.
You know, so the first round was really short. It was just two matchups, four films.
Well, when you only have 18, the bracket looks weird. It's not a normal bracket. So
yeah.
That's how, when I used a randomized generator for the brackets. So I just put in the 18 films and it funneled it through. That's all I had to do.
Cool. So the first two matchups are done. So that was, let's see, Iron Man 2 beat out
Incredible Hulk.
The Incredible Hulk. And then Thor the Dark World lost to
Guardians 2.
Guardians Volume 2, okay. And then we do know that Thor Ragnarok beat Ant-Man.
Yes, Thor Ragnarok moves on to the next round.
And as we're recording this, the voting is still barely open for Captain America the First Avenger versus the Winter Soldier. But it looks like the Winter Soldier is probably going to win that
There's a big surprise.
So it's shocking no
the
one.
It's the superior film.
But we'll have to tally that up officially, of course, after the polls are closed. If you're on Facebook and any of those posts say that they're going for more than a day, that's a mistake because Facebook, for some reason, defaults to a week instead of a day. But we're only counting the first 24 hours or so.
You know, you don't have to point out every time we make a mistake.
I just want people to be aware if they go back and try and vote on one that's already completed, I don't want anybody to be confused. So in other news, we are actually going to be at an event here locally in Kansas City coming up on Wednesday, April 25th. We'll be at the Gathering of the Geeks, which is put on by GGKC. They focus a lot on video games and esports in the Kansas City area, but Gathering of the Geeks is just geek and nerd culture in general. It doesn't have to be video games. So we'll be there putting on a presentation, kind of talking about what the Heroes Podcast Network is, some of what our shows are about, and you know, different things about things that we have planned coming up.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. I think it's just going to be you and me, Ray.
Probably.
So
that's fine. You know, you don't want to come listen to us, at least come play some arcade games with us.
Right. It should be fun. So it's going to be at Tapcade.
Yes.
If you've never been to Tapcade, Tapcade's one of those kind of retro arcade beer places that have opened up over the last couple years. And this one is downtown in Kansas City. I'm looking for the address here for anybody.
You could just put it in the comments later.
Okay, I'll put it in the comments. That's fair. Yeah, but there's a Facebook event, Gathering of the Geeks number 2. We will be there as one of the presenters. Other presenters will be there as well. So come check us out. Say hi. That should be lots of fun.
Definitely.
All right. So, guys, news. What's going on in the movie TV world?
A lot of stuff. First of all, all of CW shows except for 2 have been renewed, and those 2 are going to be revisited, so they're not being canceled. It's just they run on a different schedule. So everything except for, I believe, iZombie and
I don't know what the other one is.
I forget the other one. People are getting a little nervous about iZombie. It's had really solid ratings. I wouldn't worry about it. It's just it runs through the mid-season, so they're going to deal with it in May.
Each season of that show's aired at a different time.
Yeah.
And that's just confusing to people, I think. But, you know, that's probably the worst thing about it, is that you never know when it's going to actually be on.
Yeah.
But all the Arrowverse shows were renewed, and Black Lightning was renewed, so yes. Good signs for all of those shows. Maybe not necessarily something that everybody wanted for all of those shows, Arrow, but...
well, we call it Smoke now. Oh. It must be Smoke.
Sorry.
Yeah, my bad. That makes sense.
My bad. Maybe if they rebranded it,
they
then...
could call it the Smoking Arrow.
There you go.
Ooh.
Except Arrow really doesn't do anything anymore. He just kind of hangs out in the background. So really, just he's a supporting character. He's Felicity's arm candy.
Yeah. So
someone has to be
Felicity and Friends.
I guess so. Yeah, yeah. Basically.
Okay. Fair enough. I was excited to see the other shows be renewed.
Yeah, I mean, Flash hasn't been great this season, but it still leaves some bounds better than Arrow. And Legends is the best of all the CW shows this season.
Yeah.
To my surprise, and a lot of other people's, after last season's kind of less than stellar performance.
You know.
But this season has been great. I look forward to seeing that one every week. Flash and Arrow, I just watch because I feel like I have to.
For when they all cross over.
Yeah, exactly. And because when you've been with a show for, you know, 5.5 seasons or whatever, you just kind of feel obligated to stick with it.
I get that.
I have a hard time giving up.
Right? Because there's always hope that it'll rebound and go back to what it once was.
Yeah.
So, I get you.
It's sad. I keep hoping that it'll happen, but I know deep down in my heart that this is not just a fever dream that Oliver's having, that he's going to wake up from and the show's going to be good again.
Man, what a twist that would be.
He actually died at that mid-season finale in season 3 when Ra's al Ghul kicked him over the edge and everything else is...
It's a shame because I really love the cast, like the actual actors themselves. I think they're all great and I like watching them. It's the stories that... just totally lost me.
Yeah.
It just became like a superhero soap opera. That's
well, the issue is Green Arrow has never been a great character on his own. He works really well in the Justice League, and he works really well during the Green Lantern mashups, because they're such...
And when he's with Black Canary, you know. And yeah. He did some stuff early on with Black Lightning. That was pretty cool, but obviously they're not going to do that in the...
No.
CW verse, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
Why not?
They're not in the same universe.
I mean, neither Supergirl.
Yeah, but so, have you watched Black Lightning? I know the answer to this.
Not yet.
No,
I have not yet. But I'm just saying, they also said that Supergirl was never going.
They
to
did say that
either. There's no reason the Flash can't accidentally run to his universe.
I think that these characters are so much different than their comic book counterparts. At the very least, Arrow is. That I don't think it would work as well as it did in the comic books.
That may be. Yeah, so, that's fair. Without watching Black Lightning, I can't say that. But just from a logistical standpoint, if they wanted to do it.
Oh, I'm sure. It's a creative thing. They can do whatever they want. Yeah.
Thank you, Bruce Wayne 25, 26? I can't
25.
Remember. 25. Yeah. That 100 is the one I was looking for. That's another one with a big fan following that people are worried about. But again, I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, the 100's always had a really strong core fan base. And
exactly. That's the thing about the CW, is that all of their shows have a giant fan base. And
at least giant for CW's needs.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're not pulling in Chuck Lorre numbers, but they're also not putting out, you know, pedantic crap. So
no, that's true.
Like Chuck Lorre.
A couple of them are getting close.
Well,
it's never pedantic. It may be crap, but it's never pedantic.
That's true. Shout out to pedantic. All right, so in other news...
Shazam Suitgate 2018.
Shazam Watch.
Zachary Levi did a, Instagram live stream, something like that. Or Twitter live stream. One of those. Anyway, somebody sent him a message and literally just said in all caps, "Why the crap suit?" And
I mean, that's well thought out.
Yeah, it was great. And he basically said that, "I'm sorry things are going wrong for you in your life." I really like the suit, and I think it's awesome looking. Or no, I think he said boss or something like that.
Oh, I like it.
But he can pretty much shut the guy down. So that's your Shazam suit update. They watch our show, and so they're like, we're just never going to reveal an official photo.
We'll just drop little things for the screen.
And we'll continue the Shazam suit gate.
Shazam suit gate.
Yeah. Fantastic. Anyway, I'm sure there's other news, but I figured I'd chime that in.
Well, there's casting rumors. So fans have started a petition to get Meryl Streep to take over in the role of Leia. And I don't know what movies they're watching or what fans they are. Maybe they're fans of, like, you know, CW shows, and that's why they think this is a good idea. But I really hope this doesn't happen. And then there's also, Woody Harrelson was cast in the Venom movie, and there's rumors that he is playing Cletus Cassidy or Carnage, and I am actually okay with this. I am totally fine with this happening. So, that one, go for it. Have him be Cletus Cassidy. You know, nothing like watching one of your favorite actors play a molesting murderer.
Well, I mean, look, Woody Harrelson has played a bad guy well a few times. Yeah. Especially recently in War for Planet of the Apes. He's nuts in that movie.
Yeah.
The Leia thing is weird. Like, I love Meryl Streep. She's, if not the one of the greatest actors of all time, right? But do you need to recast Leia? Or like, do you just have to deal with the fact that the actor died?
They messed up. They killed off their two characters where the actors are still living. And they did not for the character where the actor passed away. So they backed themselves into a corner. It's the same thing that Nolan did when he killed off Two-Face.
I don't think that Luke is dead.
All right, that's fine. So,
we're not going to get into that.
Yeah, that's a different podcast.
Where did
podcast.
His hand go? Where did his robotic hand go when he faded away?
Oh my god.
I'm just saying, you don't take your robot parts into the Force.
Just don't respond.
You don't know that.
I'm just don't respond. Okay. Stop responding.
So Universal wants to build a Lord of the Rings
okay.
park?
I just want to touch on this stuff real quick. The Leia thing I don't care about. You guys have said what I pretty much feel. I don't need to repeat that. The Carnage thing. I'm of the firm belief that Carnage is not an interesting character and not someone that would translate well to any screen because he's literally... there's nothing sympathetic as a villain about him. He's literally just a crazy... like, when I say crazy, he just decides that this guy needs to die and gets his head chopped off. And, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to anything. And I just don't think that makes for an interesting villain. So they'd have to really, really modify the character for that to work for the screen, I think. And I think that would upset a lot of fans. But Woody Harrelson's a great actor. So, you know, bring it on if that's what the route they're going. I'm still really... I have a lot of weird feelings about that movie. But,
yeah. It's not a movie I ever really would have asked for, I guess, is the thing. And so it just seems weird that we've got a new Spider-Man, a new tone for Spider-Man, and they're like, no, we're just going to do a Venom movie, totally disconnected.
Sony is grasping at straws. They're doing whatever they can to keep money in their pockets. And, I mean, they cast people that have been nominated for Oscars.
Yeah.
Those people are in this movie.
So they're either paying them a lot, or the script is really good.
I don't know what.
They didn't show any of the script in the trailer, so we don't...
Right.
It was just Tom Hardy screaming, which maybe that is the script.
just 2 hours of Tom Hardy.
Screams in an American accent.
When Spider-Man 2 came out, all the fans, everybody was like, we want Venom, we want Venom, we want Venom. And that's why the studio decided, Sam, you gotta put Venom in here. And that's when Sam went, nope. We got the emo dancing symbiote Spider-Man. So did you watch that video I posted? Game Donkey did a thing talking about how it was a masterpiece of cinema. It was the funniest thing I've ever
seen. Satirically?
Yeah. But it was so good.
Because if he's serious, I can't watch it.
No, it wasn't serious. It was on April Fool's Day thing, it was hilarious, yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
You were getting ready to say another piece of news. I'm sorry.
Universal Studios wants to build a Lord of the Rings park. I imagine this would be to financially compete with the Star Wars park that Disney is going to open. Mm-hmm. And it would tie things up so that each company has 4 parks apiece. I think it could be a lot of fun depending on what they do. Like, I'll ride an Ent. Like, that'd be cool. Like, I'll battle at Helm's Deep.
Is there a place where I can just eat a lot? Because I feel like I'm closer to a hobbit than most of the other characters.
That's true. I feel like you are as well.
I think they should probably just build it in New Zealand, in Hobbiton, because that's an actual thing that you can go visit.
Yeah, they just left it in New Zealand's like, that's cool.
Well, they use it. That's like one of their biggest tourist attractions.
From here in Kansas City.
It's them and Flight of the Conchords. Like, they're just always on display.
From Kansas City, it's like 20-something, 22 hours to get to New Zealand.
Okay.
So the market for people to go is a little bit smaller.
But it makes it more authentic, so the people that do go are willing to pay the extra money.
Yeah, I don't think people that go to Disneyland are looking for authentic. They're just looking for amusement.
Maybe they're not going to go. Maybe they shouldn't go for the same
market.
You mean
I really can't ride inside of a flying elephant?
Not a living flying
elephant. You mean she really can't make out with Gaston?
I mean,
actually, you can, Rachel. Right?
I can make out with Gaston.
Yeah, it is realistic.
That's a real human. But
it's not in France.
That's true.
So, yeah.
You just pretend that part. It's okay.
Right before the revolution.
I'm just saying. I think it's a really cool idea. I think doing it in the United States.
Is there going to be a barrel sense. Ride where you get to ride around down like a street and a bunch of barrels?
That would actually be fun.
No, like, a barrel flume.
I'd be having like PTSD flashbacks from watching the Hobbit movies.
Do I get to like try and run a falling rocks? Gosh.
All right, now it could be cool if they did the like you could do an archery competition with like, you know, an animatronic.
I feel like
Orlando
it's just
going to
be a knockoff Ren Faire. Like,
yeah, basically.
A high budget one.
Fingers crossed.
Well, it's Universal Studios. I mean,
yeah,
it'll be high budget.
There's just going to be a lot of walking, is my guess, is what's going to happen at this park.
Just like their other parks.
Yeah. Well, especially at this one, though.
I guess those are more just a lot of standing.
Yeah.
Really. Maybe this one, they'll just keep you going.
And you could just pay and ride the Golden Eagle, but, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that have problems with that theory.
That's the VIP pass. The fast exactly. pass gets you an Eagle badge. Yeah. Yes, these are the ideas, Universal. We will help you.
That's right. Pay us a lot of money.
I would be such an ass and show up in like this black robe and chase people.
I'd dress up like Smeagol.
It's awful.
Filthy hobbitses.
Well, then I get to be Gandalf.
That's really bad. Gandalf, no, you're not Gandalf. You're Saruman.
What?
Yeah.
How?
I don't know, but you're not Gandalf.
I'm closer to Gandalf than Saruman. Why not?
You're closer to Gimli than Gandalf.
That may be, but not Saruman.
We should be the wizards for Halloween. One can be Gandalf.
No, because we're obviously going to fight about who's Gandalf.
I'm Gandalf.
No.
I want to be Radagast, so okay. Screw you
So
guys.
You can be Saruman.
No.
Because I want a big old bunny.
Come on, just think of the wig that you can wear.
I don't want to wear a wig.
It'll be beautiful.
I'm going to grow my hair out.
All right, that's fine. You do you.
We are way off topic.
All right. Is there any more news that we want to cover before we dive into
Lastly, the director for Doctor Strange has said that, you know, even though it's not officially confirmed, they are so far into writing a second script that they know who the villain is. They know what they're going to do with Baron Mordo. They know what they're going to do with Doctor Strange. You know, they have an idea on how to bring back Rachel McAdams.
Oh, damn, I was hoping you were going to say Dormammu. Sorry. Since he was wasted.
They didn't talk about Dormammu. They talked about Nightmare.
That's cool, too.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah. It kind of puts them at, like, a Mexican standoff, because Doctor Strange is obviously fighting both Nightmare and Mordo, but Mordo is also fighting Nightmare and Doctor Strange, so it could be really fun.
Hmm.
Like, a Clint Eastwood movie with, like, magic.
That's cool. I'm good with that.
Yeah. It could be a lot of fun.
I would be very excited to see another Doctor Strange movie. We just rewatched it to kind of, you know, prep for Infinity War. And it was the first time I had seen it since theaters, and I really liked that movie. So, the special effects are super cool. They did a really good job with all of that.
Tilda Swinton was incredibly miscast.
Yeah, but I thought, given that she did the role, she was fine.
Well, of course, she's fine. Tilda Swinton's, like, never not fine.
Right. That's all I meant.
Okay. Yeah. That's fine. All right. Let's talk Ready Player One.
All right. So, the numbers. We'll start with the numbers. It did fine. It was number one at the box office. Brought in a little over $53 million domestically and $128 million internationally. So, over 180, over 181 through the weekend, which is a good opening weekend.
Over its budget.
Definitely, yeah, budget of $175 million, which is a lot of money.
Yes.
You know, we talk about budget a lot here, so, you know, comparison's sake, Aquaman and Suicide Squad were $165, Civil War and BVS were $250, so there's just, you know, some comparison's sake for budgets. So, you know, it did fine. Black Panther slipped to number three. It's still making money. It made another $17 million this week in its seventh week in the box office, which is amazing. It's getting close to $1.3 billion now.
If this movie had failed, if Black Panther had been, say, middle of the road or towards the bottom end of their money-making films, this would already be out on Blu-ray and DVD. We would see it, you know, a lot closer to Infinity War, but that's not going to happen.
It's still being shown in over 3,000 screens, right, which is more than some movies ever get, let alone in its seventh week. Bad news for Pacific Rim Uprising. It dropped to fifth, which doesn't sound bad, but it made just over $9 million in its second week, which was almost a 70% drop. It was like 67% and change.
That sounds awful.
So it's not doing well here. It's doing fine internationally, kind of like Warcraft did, but people are not really going to see it. So those are the numbers. There wasn't really a lot of other competition for Ready Player One with nobody.
So what was number two then?
Sorry, I can look that up here in just a moment. Number two was Tyler Perry's Acrimony.
Oh, okay.
Which brought in 17 million. Oh, I'm sorry. Black Panther was 11.4, not 17.4. Okay. I misread it. But it was still number three there. So, but that's the thing. Like five movies opened this weekend. The two I just mentioned, God's Not Dead, A Light in the Dark, Boggy 2, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong.
Don't even.
And Finding Your Feet. The last two did not even make $1 million combined. So, you know, not a whole lot of competition when the number three is in its seventh week in the box office. So, Tomb Raider's still in the top 10. It's at number seven. Wrinkle in Time's at number eight. So, you know, March was a packed month, it felt like, going into it. But
we've never had one full month where we did a review every single week.
Yeah.
This was our first one.
And I got to tell you, I didn't love it.
Yeah, it was a lot of pressure. Having to see a movie every weekend.
Not gonna do that again.
So, I want to enjoy it and not feel too pressured. So, like Tomb Raider, I saw on a Monday night, very late after I got back from the trip. And
we did that last night. We went and saw Ready Player One.
So, you know, we'll ease things up in April here. We're only doing Infinity War.
Yes.
So, and I think in May we're doing Deadpool and Solo. I think are it in May.
Yes.
So, we're only doing three in those 2 months instead of four in a row. Like we did in March. So that'll be better. But all right. So let's dive in a bit on Ready Player One. Ray and I listened to the audiobook, which is narrated by Will Wheaton.
About 5 months ago.
Mm-hmm, back in, I think it was October. Ryan, did you read the book? Okay. So we have two different kind of backgrounds on that, which is good because I think the movie was probably received differently by those two different groups of people, those who read it and those who didn't.
And to be fair, Rachel has a very different opinion of the book than you do.
That's a very good point.
So maybe her opinion will be different than yours. So I'm sure you know what her opinion is, but yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point though. Yeah. So I actually really love the book. I thought it was a lot of fun. No, it's nothing deep or anything like that. It's a YA novel, but I enjoyed it. And I know, you know, Ray, your opinion's a little different.
I believe that all it succeeds in doing is throwing a bunch of nostalgia at people, throwing flashy, shiny things at you. So you overlook the fact that the characters are undeveloped, that the world is not fully comprehended, and that the author had a half-baked idea based on stuff that he loved as a kid. So that's just my opinion.
Well, yeah, that's what we do. So, where would you guys like to start as far as the movie is concerned?
Don't we do our spoiler-free?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. You're absolutely right. Spoiler-free take, Ryan.
I enjoyed it. Of the four movies that we have reviewed this last month, it was my favorite.
Really?
Which isn't saying much because all the other movies, I didn't give very high scores. But this one, I don't want to get too deep into it in the spoiler free, but I enjoyed it. And I think that if you're of a certain generation and a certain background, then you will enjoy it more than somebody who doesn't share those things with you. Of course, I'm sure that can be said about any movie, but I think this movie specifically caters to a very specific group of people. And I think if you're in that group, you will enjoy it.
Right?
I hated it. I wouldn't watch it again if you paid me. I'm not going to watch it if it shows up on TBS ever again. I would rather just drive to Spielberg's house and slap him in the face. Ask for my money back.
Wow. If someone wants to pay me to rewatch the movie, that's totally fine. off the top of my head, I'm having a hard time thinking of a movie that I wouldn't take money to see. I don't think I've ever seen anything that bad. But I was disappointed in it. I don't hate it by any means. If it shows up on TV or Netflix and I don't really have anything else going on as a background thing, I think it's fine. I didn't find it offensive in any way. But I was disappointed in it. I I tried to temper my expectations the best I could based on what I knew from the book and knowing that this was not a direct adaptation, but Steven Spielberg's interpretation of the book, his words, I suppose. And I tried my best to go into it with that mindset, but it wasn't enough for me. So I was disappointed in it.
Fair enough.
But to Ryan's point about the movies that we watched in March, though, it wasn't my favorite, but it wasn't my least favorite either. So I hadn't really thought about ranking the March movies, but it definitely wouldn't be last as far as rewatchability is concerned. So
okay.
All right, so this is your spoiler warning. It is different enough from the book that even if you've read the book, there are probably going to be some spoilers in here because there's some substantial differences. So if you don't know, if you haven't seen the movie, you care, all that good stuff, this is your chance to stop and pause and watch it and come back later. So let's do it. Let's dive in. Okay, so I want to get one small piece out of the way because it's something I feel like we forget to talk about a lot that is still important to me anyway. That's the music. I was really disappointed in the total lack of any real memorable music in this movie based on the book focusing on 80s music very heavily and it being a big part of Holiday's life and a big part of the Gunters' lives and things of that nature, the trivia behind it. So to have really nothing was disappointing.
Yeah, I think the trailers had more memorable music than the movie did. But, I mean, I wasn't super disappointed. I'd never read the book, so I don't know how important it was in the book. But, you know, you could tell there was, you know, Back to the Future themes and things like that that were obviously Back to the Future is a fandom.
Yeah.
In this movie. So, I mean, it was fine. It wasn't, I wouldn't say it stood out that it was great, but it also didn't stand out as being terrible for me. So, yeah, I was pretty okay with it.
Ray, any thoughts?
I mean, Hall & Oates playing over the credits was the most memorable piece of music in the whole thing. And, I mean, Hall & Oates are great, but they're definitely not the definitive band of the 80s. So that,
not quite.
I mean, if you wanted to play off the Back to the Future, you could have had Huey Lewis.
I would have been okay with that,
right?
Yeah.
I know how more much than okay Ryan with that. Loves Huey Lewis. You're right. It was just a little forgettable, and music's important to film. So
especially recently, like, starting, you know, of course, like Guardians of the Galaxy and Baby Driver now, like movies have started to take music more seriously in mainstream films than they have.
I guess it's more directors have, because you go back and you look at Zack Snyder's soundtracks and they're all very intriguing and purposeful, and every single song is meant to stand out or accompany the scene. So same with Tarantino's soundtracks. They're very hand selected and I guess thought out. So
that's fair.
More directors are doing that, and it's no surprise to me that Edgar Wright's one of them, but Spielberg's not.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so we'll move on from music then. You guys want to start anywhere in particular? I just wanted to get that piece out of the way. It was kind of general.
So this is the newest Spielberg movie, supposedly going to his roots and doing his thing again. And I kind of wanted to bring up the point that I feel like he had a contract that said he only has to direct 17 minutes of live footage and that everything else is just going to get done by the computer, so he doesn't need to worry about it.
I, too, felt like he had an agenda, but I feel like that's the same for his entire career. Like, to me, his better movies are the ones where he doesn't have to rely on a lot of other things, like CGI is one of them, but...
I mean, Jurassic Park, but, you know, there's only 8 minutes of CG or whatever it is, yeah. But that's a movie that everybody uses as a, like, a milestone for CG.
It's true. Animatronics,
but...
I guess Spielberg's entire resume to me just feels like he's knocking things off the bucket list. Like, it doesn't feel like he makes movies because he loves them anymore. Because even now he's talking about doing Indiana Jones 5, which feels like a paycheck to me. And then he wants to redo West Side Story.
But is this a bucket list thing to check off? The book's not even that old. You know, this isn't like one of the great American novels or something like
no,
that.
No, I don't
you know?
Think Ready Player One is the bucket list. I think doing, you know, a film in 90% mocap could be one of his bucket
I guess he hasn't really done that. It didn't feel like a Spielberg movie, if that makes any sense.
The last 15 minutes definitely did.
Maybe the last 15 minutes did, but I think by then it already kind of lost me. But the movie as a whole, it could have been any director, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, 70 or 80% of the movie is in the Oasis. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think he had any part in that.
I mean, that's interesting. I don't know. He is the only one credited as the director. So somebody had to run.
I'm sure he, made decisions, but I'm sure he was presented with things and they were saying, this is how we're planning on doing it. Do you have any other ideas? And yeah, so it was something along those lines. I can't imagine he's not been one to do this much digital work before. So
true.
It seems likely that he was mostly just signing the paperwork and having them do their thing.
Well, so now let's talk about the CGI work, since that's kind of the main focus of the film is in the Oasis.
You're in a pretend virtual reality and things don't have to look 100% sharp. Things don't have to look real. Some things can appear
Uncanny
more realistic.
Valley is okay.
Yeah, exactly. Some things can look, I guess, more polished than others, more realistic than others. And I will say that's the thing. H looked much better to me than Parzival and Artemis. The two of them looked like they were, you know, sculpted perfectly for dolls. And so,
yeah, I found the CGI effects to be the best part of the movie for me. I thought that was the area that whoever did that work, was the best work.
The opening race with King Kong looked awesome. Everything going on outside of the race, like what was happening during the race, looked really good. And yeah. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, that's what I think the special effects were really solid. Like if that's where the bulk of this money went, because I mean, it doesn't really have an A-list cast. So if that's where the money went, I think that was money well spent. I think everything looked really good. I don't recall anything that I looked at in the movie and thought, that looks bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought it mostly looked really cool. I would say that during a lot of the action sequences, it kind of suffered from the Transformers syndrome, where it was hard to keep track of everything that was going on the screen. Not to mention the fact that they do cram a lot of references and Easter eggs. Obviously, that's the whole movie is basically a giant Easter egg.
Right.
So you want to try and pick out those little things, but there's not really the time to do that when you're sitting in the theater trying to take in this battle scene or a giant race or something like that. So, yes, it was all really beautiful and well done, but some things were hard to follow. The big battle at the end was hard for me to follow a lot of it. And
so much going on.
The race was another one.
This is one of those where the Easter eggs do not add to the story itself. They don't move the plot along. They are there for eye candy. So it's not like something in a Marvel film or other connected universes where the small references may point to what's down the line. This is just a completely encapsulated moment, and everything is there to trigger your eyes. So I had...
Yeah, seeing the Battletoads doesn't mean anything.
Right.
It was interesting that they put Battletoads in the movie.
So, to your point that you brought up about reading the book, where you said you thought it was basically just throwing nostalgia at the face, and
I thought
that was
this
where
was
a lot
even
of the enjoyment
worse.
Was. I completely disagree with that. I think that they were using it as something cool, but it wasn't about all the pop culture references. I mean, I guess technically the plot was about pop culture references, but it wasn't about Battletoads being in a fight scene.
No.
You know what I mean? It was about specific pop culture references. I was worried that the movie was going to come in and be like, hey guys, here's Tracer. And then pause on Tracer for 3 seconds or, you know, something like that. And it really wasn't like that. Yeah. You would see a panning shot and you might see He-Man over here or a Battletoad over here or Claptrap from Borderlands. And, you know, but it wasn't a focus. It was just a thing. And if you follow gaming or VR or anything like that, there is a program called VR Chat where you get to pick an avatar, and it's, you know, every 3D model from every game that's ever existed, and you have everything from Knuckles from the Sonic series to anime babes and things like that. So, I mean, based on what we actually have in the real world right now, it's really not that far off. I mean, it's very similar, so
no,
it didn't bother
people
me
would
that
totally
much.
Do it. The thing that bothered me is the only one that got original characters were the cast. Everything else was copyrighted or trademarked character or licensed character. So, you know, that seemed unrealistic to me. I imagine some other people besides the main cast would want their own different avatars, but that's just me.
Yeah, I think the thing for me was that I felt in the book that the pop culture references were significant. So when you saw, like, so in the movie, it's the Iron Giant. In the book, it's not the Iron Giant. Okay, it's Ultraman.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it was there's another robot. I'm drawing a blank on which robot. But it was Parsifal that got the robot in the book. It wasn't an Iron Giant. It was something else. I can't remember now.
Yeah.
But those references were specific references that were talked about that had a purpose, that had a point. They were explained. They earned these things, right? These were items they unlocked by completing quests and things of that nature. Whereas, like, H just decides, I'm going to build an Iron Giant. And don't get me wrong.
You said it was a commission for somebody.
Right, it was a commission for somebody, right. And, you know, everything in the book seemed more purposeful, right? So, like, the coin, for example, is a good example. In the movie, he gets this coin by basically making a bet with who turns out to be Ogden Morrow. And yes, the robot butler. You know, he just kind of offhandedly wins this bet and gets this coin that is a huge turning point in the film that the book really focuses on quite a bit. But it's like, everybody's dead and loses, and IOI then is going to win because they're going to send more people in. Oh, but he's got this extra life. That's what wins the day. Right. And so how he gets that in the book is really difficult. He doesn't really know what it is. He can't, like, it's in his inventory. He's not allowed to get rid of it. And it's like this piece that follows him along through 2/3 of the book almost. And at the end, at the last moment where you think, like, everything's over, you think they've lost, and this thing comes back into play. And so all of those pop culture references that are in there, whether or not you enjoyed them, they weren't part of the holiday story. And about the Oasis story and why the challenges were significant.
Absolutely true. That's my issue, is that the challenges didn't... Nothing in this movie seemed like there were high enough stakes. The book creates a dystopian world where everything sucks, so you escape into the virtual reality.
Which is the same in the movie.
Yeah. But the book makes it more dangerous and makes IOI very dangerous. And here, to me, it doesn't feel like that at all.
I think there, that's fair. That's a fair criticism. But I would also say that there's a big difference between a book and what a book can, write out the description and what can happen in a movie. And without having a bunch of
useless,
I mean, it already was full of giving you constant information that you needed for the plot to advance.
You couldn't just see it. You also needed to have the narration too.
Right. So I give it a little bit of a pass on that. Also, I never read the book. Right. So I'm going off of, what I perceived.
My issue with that is the cops come and arrest Sorrento at the very end. What was stopping the cops from holding him back anyway? If IOI is doing all this dirty stuff in the Oasis, you know, 10 cops are going to take them all down at the very end? And, like, that to me just came off as a last minute...
It was the way to stitch everything up at the end, right? Because it did beg the question, like, where have the cops been for 2 hours kind of thing, when, you know, there's been explosions and people abducted and drones all over the city and all these types of things. Like, it was very kind of nebulous as to what types of powers IOI had. And then what is Sorrento arrested for at the end? Is it because he's just, like, threatening people with a gun in public, or was he arrested for something else? Because threatening the gun in public thing is really, like, the least bad thing he's done in the movie.
You know? Well, I don't think it was necessary for him to, like, read off his list of charges at the end of the movie or anything. It was obvious why he got arrested, because he was a bad guy doing bad things, and I don't think they needed more explanation than that, personally. Yeah. But if that bothered you, then fair enough. I mean, that's...
I guess it was just more of, you know, why did it take so long kind of thing. You know, like,
absolutely. I agree with that for sure.
Because it's a weird dystopian future, so who knows what the police force size is in comparison to this now very quickly growing population, right? But, you know, you have the explosion in the stacks, and, you know, no police end up really being around looking for anybody. You know, you would think at some point there would just be more of a police force in that area, because it's all very close together, you know.
Do they cover that in the book? So they talk about the police force in the book?
So in the book, it's incredibly different, so I'm not drawing that comparison.
Okay.
Because, like, they're not, he's not in Cleveland in the book.
Columbus.
Okay. Columbus, excuse me. he's not, like, they're in different locations and he has to go to where IOI is in the book. So they totally changed that, and that's fine. They wanted to consolidate it, and having it geographically closer makes things easier, which is fine. Like, that doesn't bother me. But the book is just handled drastically different. And if I remember right, cops never show up in the book, ever. So when we read the book, I was just under the assumption that, like, IOI was essentially acting as the law enforcement when it dealt with these types of things, because there was no other sign of law enforcement, which the movie had me feeling too. But once you show regular cops, then I actually ask, well, then where have they been? Is kind of the thing. Because it just seems like otherwise IOI has unlimited power. So what changed? What was the tipping point?
Yeah.
You know? But I think my biggest problem with the movie is that everything's very glossed over. So there doesn't seem to be nothing seems substantial. Like, why is Halliday important? Why are these people Gunters? What does that mean to anybody who doesn't know what that word means? Like, I know what the word means because I read the book, but let's pretend I didn't, right? Why is it important to be a Gunter?
They explain that in the beginning in the exposition.
I mean, kind of.
There's a whole, like, 8-minute monologue about, that's all exposition about this stuff.
There is some exposition. That's true. I just didn't feel like it really went into the detail needed for somebody who didn't know the universe. Like, why?
I didn't have a problem understanding it, and I didn't know the universe.
So let me ask you that. What was the significance of the race as a challenge?
What was the significance of the race? I don't think there was significance to it in the movie, of the race specifically. I mean, obviously.
See, that's the problem, though, because the next two challenges are about how well do you know Halliday? How well do you understand him and know his history, right? Because that's how they pick The Shining, because they know that it's his favorite scary movie, yada, 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 right? So the race is totally disconnected from Halliday. Why?
Well, I mean, they had already, all they say is that they found, or that the race had already been discovered, yeah. And that was the first puzzle piece. And maybe Halliday, in this Easter egg, it's not unheard of for video game designers to have the first part of a multi-step challenge be fairly easy to find. I know in Borderlands and things like that, and you haven't played those, but I'm sure you play games that are similar enough. You can literally get a quest for the first part of an Easter egg, and from there you have to discover things yourself. So that wasn't a problem for me. But the race, you're right, it was not significant in any way really to Halliday while the other quests were. But I would say that, you know, I would rather watch this race than watch him play Joust against somebody, which it was in the book for the first challenge.
Yeah. Well, but see, that wasn't the only part of the challenge. He has to go through a dungeon that's right. Got like Indiana Jones style traps.
Which would have been like cool, but then it would have been very anticlimactic watching two people sit there play Joust for the Atari.
I mean, I think there's ways you could have spiced it up.
And they did.
You know, well, I don't think taking a dungeon that you had to not only locate... Look,
I would have loved to have seen a dungeon. I thought when I heard that that's what the first challenge was in the book, that it was like a Dungeons & Dragons style, you know, that would have been really cool. But I wasn't disappointed in the race either, because the race, as Rachel said, was actually pretty cool. And despite it being different than the book, it was visually interesting.
I mean, it was entertaining, you know, and I wasn't trying to compare the race to the first challenge in the book. I was trying to compare it to the other two challenges in the movie, because the other two challenges in the movie are a lot more intimately connected with Halliday.
Sure.
And if the first part of the challenge to find the race was, I mean, I guess we could speculate on that, but we won't know, right? Because it's not in the movie. So I guess that's really where I'm coming from, is that it just seems just disconnected from the rest. It seems like it has nothing to do with the rest of the challenges. Whereas, you know, the whole idea of the Gunters is to know Halliday. Like, that's what they have a PhD in, right? But I feel like IOI was hiring all of those, what do they call the Halliday?
Sixers.
No, the experts.
I don't know.
There's a name for it. I can't remember the name for them. But the experts in Halliday that IOI has, like all those scientist people in the movie who were cheering at the end for Parsival. You know,
yeah,
talking about.
I know exactly.
Okay. Just react. Okay. Yeah. you know, they're experts in Halliday. So how would their expertise have helped anybody in the race?
I mean, to be fair, in the race, discovering how to beat King Kong was connected to Halliday. So maybe the initial discovery wasn't, but they had been trying for 5 years to finish this race and had not done it. Which
yeah.
Seems crazy to me as a video game fan. The first thing you do in a racing game is try and go backwards and see if
you know, you can cheese it, but
you do it in the platformer too, right? Yeah. Like in Donkey Kong, sure. go the other way. There's something there.
But I mean, I was able to ignore that, and it was at least connected to Halliday and connected to the plot, so whatever, it's fine. But
it seems more accidentally connected. Like he doesn't like. There's nothing about the race going backwards. I forget the exact sentence, but it just had something to do with going back and
going back at full throttle.
Yeah.
Don't you wish you could just go backwards?
Yeah, and he specifically says, like, at full throttle, and that's how it, you know, relates to the race.
But that came off more as, like...
But any of it could have been accidental. Finding the other clues could have been you know what I mean?
Well, finding a clue accidentally isn't the problem. I meant more of, like, the clue seemed more like a tooltip hint than a puzzle to figure out, right? Because it didn't have anything to do with, oh, what was his favorite XYZ, or what did he have, what was his theory on this? It was... If you accidentally watch this clip longer than you're intended to watch it, then he says something out of character that happens to have to do with the first challenge.
Well, was beating somebody in Joust a puzzle? I mean, that's just a challenge also. I don't understand. You know what I mean?
I mean, it had more to do with the 80s, because the book is very focused on one decade,
sure,
where the movie's not. So I'm not trying to compare it to the original challenges, because if you want to go that direction, all three challenges in the book, I think, are better than the three challenges in the movie.
But wouldn't have been as interesting to watch in a movie.
I'm not so sure. I mean, in the book, he ends up going to the Blade Runner planet and has a massive shootout in the giant
pyramid. And he also reenacts the entire movie as Matthew Broderick.
You're right, but
which would not be interesting.
I'm not saying it has to be like the book, which is why I was specifically not comparing it to the book.
Well, you can't talk about a movie that's based on a book and not compare it to the book. I mean, there were changes.
Well, in that case, I can't win either way.
No, I'm not saying you're wrong. It
couldn't be a direct adaptation, right? That's doing the War Games thing would have been boring, right? Yeah. That would not have worked. And I'm okay with not doing that. My point is that the challenges are 98% different from the book. And they didn't need to be. You could have still had a dungeon with Indiana Jones-style traps and things like that and had something interesting at the end of that instead of Joust, if that was something that was going to be too boring to do. Right, but the truth is that the end challenge where he's playing the Atari 2600
is pretty much that
is more boring than the third challenge in the book that is still a video game thing, right? So I don't think they changed the challenges because they're boring. I think they changed the challenges because Spielberg just wanted to have,
which is possible
challenges.
Too. So I'm sure the challenges in the book were really cool to read and very exciting, but yeah, I don't think the War Games thing would work. I mean, we're actually running out of time at this point, so I want to touch on the fact that I thought the Shining thing was really cool, and I know you hated the movie, so you probably didn't like that, but I thought the recreation was really thorough and good, and I thought it was something that was totally unexpected and
visually
turned out really cool.
Visually, that was very impressive, because it did look like these virtual reality characters had stepped onto the set of the Overlook Hotel. So, it, like, he changed...
It's not something that's really been done before that I have...
No, that was very, very cool.
And that's why I'm saying the visuals in the movie, I actually think are outstanding. They
did
a great job.
He also could have easily used one of his own films. It could have been Jaws, but he chose another movie that wasn't even his, and he recreated it. So that was impressive.
And I did like, because The Shining is my favorite horror movie ever. So
you and Halliday.
I'm a little biased that because I love that movie. And I really enjoyed that it wasn't done in sequential order like the movie. So I wasn't anticipating the axes coming through the door at that moment, because that's not when it happens. And it's fun to be caught off guard when you're like, when you believe you're anticipating what's happening next. Because like, oh, it's The Shining. Well, I know what's going to happen. And they totally throw you for a loop. That was fun.
And seeing the one scared character, running into the twins and the blood thing, you know, I thought that was all really cool. And
it's a great scene. That's a really cool scene. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like the second and third challenges were better than the first challenge. Yeah, I like the Shining aspect. I thought that was really interesting. And that was a more interesting thing than doing the War Games,
mm-hmm.
right? Because while the War Games thing was cool to read, that would just be boring as hell to watch.
It would be the end of Doctor Strange, where it was really cool in a comic book and so very in character, but, you know, seeing somebody repeat the same thing over 100 times or whatever is not interesting. So
yeah, because it takes a while. He has to go through literally every line of the movie as that character in real time.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's a lengthy part of that section. And so I'm glad they didn't do that. It was more of just the way these challenges came to be, how Parsifal becomes the one to do it. It just wasn't, it, like, I don't know. It just seemed more accidental than it needed to be. He's supposed to be the big hero, and he kind of gets there at the end, but he almost just, he basically has help for everything.
Right? Yeah, no, he was absolutely not the hero. Like,
and that's
he was
the problem. The hero, really. He's supposed to be. Even at the, so at the end.
Because he worked for it his entire life. Right. And he didn't really here. He just kind of lucked into it.
Like at the end where he's playing the Atari game, Adventure, the IOI people, that woman that they keep showing, she figured it out.
Yeah.
Right? So if he doesn't figure it out in the next 30 seconds, that's it. IOI wins. They figured it out before him, right? He just happened to get there because of the bomb and the extra coin. Whereas, you know, his character was so much more significant in figuring things out well before anybody else in the book, because he was that much of an expert, that he knew it and dedicated so much of his life to Halliday, that he was the best Gunter out there. And that was important. And in the movie, I mean, Artemis helps him figure out the second part, because she's the first one to figure out the zombie dance thing in The Shining, right? And she helps him get to the third challenge too. He's not getting there without the help of all of that. And don't even get me started on the two quote brothers,
Daito and Sho.
Yeah, I mean, they changed Sho's name for some reason. I would like to know if anybody knows why it's not Daito and Shoto. I would like to know why. I'm just curious. But they are all really significant in the book. These are they say at one time the high five. That's in the book a ton. These are the best in the world, and they're not friends when things start. They don't get along when things start, except for H and Z, and even they are a little icy on helping each other when it actually comes to doing gunting, you know. And so I just felt like the soul of what it was supposed to be was just stripped away to be an action flick.
That's, I mean, all. That's fair. I agree about Percival being not a waste, but a character that was made to be believed that he was going to be the hero of the movie, and then kind of disappointing. But I didn't have a problem with any of those other things because I didn't read the book, so I didn't know that the high five was missing and that this was supposed to be some big moment or anything like that. All I went there for was an action movie with some references and some cool visuals, and really that's what I came out with. It's not, you know, some really amazing film that we're going to write classes about in colleges. But, I mean, it was enjoyable for me. It was worth the money that we paid to get into the theater. And like I said, I enjoyed it more than the other movies that we've watched over the past few weeks. I actually am a little surprised that you completely hated it. I thought you would find some enjoyment in it, but, you know, it's a fair, all the criticisms are valid, and, you know, this is the one time where it's like the opposite of what it normally is. So,
I mean, it's definitely an entertaining flick. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, if it's on TV, I'll watch it. It's entertaining. And it's not, I didn't find any of it offensive or anything like that. It just,
I did see an article today talking about how white the movie was. It's like, were you even watching the movie? Like, there's two Asian characters right there. There's a black character. Well, I mean,
I guess it's just culturally. Like, that kind of stuff was what.
I think they said that every other Avatar in the movie was white.
Oh, okay. Well, if it's just like what's on screen, then that's a reflection of society. Most of the fictional characters are white, and we are working on that. So, yeah. I mean, steps in the next direction.
Ninja Turtles aren't white.
That's the thing. You had the Ninja Turtles, you had the Battletoads, okay, you had a bunch of
I don't really think that's Spartans. A valid thing to get into at this point. All right,
that's like, fine.
We're three white people. We really don't have a lot to say on it.
I didn't count.
I will say
most of them were non-humanoids.
At least for me, it's very male-driven.
That's true.
It does not appeal to me at all. It felt like a giant sausage party. All the girls were written by men.
And the girl was literally like the prize at the end. Yeah. It wasn't like getting control of the Oasis and all the other stuff. This one chick. Also, I want to touch on this, and I talked to my girlfriend about this after the movie, but she's telling him, oh, you won't like me, I'm not the same, I'm ugly in real life or whatever. And then he meets her and she's got like this really faded birthmark around her eye and is otherwise a very attractive woman. It's like, really?
So that's from the book, but they meet in very different ways.
Yeah. Fist they don't meet fine, until the very end.
Still, it's like, yeah, it was just weird that we're supposed to believe that this chick is going to be not attractive. And then he meets her and she's just got a little bit of hair covering her eye because of a very faded, pale birthmark.
Now, to your point, Ray, this movie had twice as many women in it because they created a brand new character for the for IOI. That was a woman. Because Artemis is the only one of any significant... I guess the aunt, right? I guess that he lives with.
And H.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, H. I'm sorry, H. Yeah, my mistake. H is played as a male in most of the story, so that's my bad.
Like, because of H, because of Artemis, it could have been really cool to touch on the gender roles in this, and again, it's just looked over. Like, they had the material for a really deep, dark story that, you know, goes through and talks about poverty and class systems and gender, and it wasn't there. It was a shiny, sparkly sausage party action film, and, you know, that's just not for me anymore. There's been too many good, deep action films for me to give a pass, especially to one of the greatest directors of our time. Like, it's just, you know, that's just me. It feels superficial.
I mean, Artemis was better in the book.
Okay. There's one big thing that happened in between the book coming out and this movie being made as far as video games go, and that was Gamergate, and that kind of changed a lot for women online and women in gaming, and maybe the movie needed to reflect and respect that a little bit more for me. I don't know. I'm not here to draw comparisons because I really don't like it and I don't want to have to revisit it, so...
Okay, so you heard it here, folks. Never speak of Ready Player
One. I do want to ask.
I'm just kidding.
I do want to ask you guys, what age range do you think this movie was made for? What was the specific?
It's a YA novel.
I understand that, but I'm saying the movie.
My 10-year-old niece absolutely loved it. So I would say 10-year-olds.
I was going to say like 8 to 16.
So why was so much emphasis on Atari and stuff that was not around at all when these kids were...
For the parents. For the same reason Pixar has adult jokes. Right.
But those adult jokes are like a little thing. One of the end of the challenges was literally at playing an Atari game.
Well, so I have a theory about that. And that is, again, I don't think they really knew. That's in the book. Like, the last challenge in the book is he enters this room, and there's not one Atari 2600. There's a bunch of classic consoles. And he not only has to figure out the right game, but he has to figure out the right console and then figure out what to do on the right game on the right console. So it takes a while. And I don't think they knew what to replace it with. So they just scaled
it down.
Well, they couldn't
use any Nintendo products because they do not let people in their films or use their
stuff. It's very
expensive. Exactly. Yeah. Like, it doesn't get passed out to everybody.
So, like, that was the problem with Wreck-It Ralph, is that Wreck-It Ralph was supposed to have Mario, not Bowser. Bowser's a hell of a lot cheaper than Mario.
But, they used Bowser and they used Sonic to do the whole if you get killed outside your game thing. And when that was supposed to be Mario.
Right. Exactly, but Sega's a lot cheaper. So I think they didn't really know how to finish it. So they basically watered down the last challenge. And last challenge isn't really any different or more interesting than the book is. I think, if anything, that's the only challenge that the book is more interesting, you know, from a visual perspective, because there was more going on. I just don't think they knew what to do and how to replace it.
That was entirely possible.
Because they were stuck with, they kept Halliday as an 80s icon, as like, that's who he is. He's an 80s person, right? Because you show his room and it's all 80s stuff. So they didn't change who Halliday was, but they wanted to update all of the other references.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So you have Halo and you have Overwatch and Deadpool and Harlequin, you know, but you still have Halliday who doesn't care about that stuff. He cares about
and
the Atari 2600 in Boston.
Sense if he aged it up 15, 20 years where, you know, it's all about the PlayStation. And
I like that. Obviously, I'm a sucker for the 80s.
You
but
are?
Yeah, I do think it would probably have been more relevant. Like, right now, for me, it seemed like it was a little confused as to who the demographic was.
Superficial movies are great for kids because they are there for the shiny and...
Apparently, I'm a child.
No.
I didn't mean that.
I think that if I hadn't read the book, okay. I probably would have enjoyed it more. If I hadn't read the book, because I know the potential that the story has from my perspective. But I think you're right. I think it wanted to keep Halliday as the same person he was in the book, but they wanted modern references. And those two things are in conflict with each other because he's not a modern character. The whole point of his character is that he's stuck in the 80s mentally.
That he didn't grow up.
And right. Then,
yeah.
And that's what who the Gunters are. The Gunters are 80s experts, right? They're not the ones who are going to have tracer avatars because that's not who they are. They're going to have the DeLorean and with the Ghostbusters symbol on it, yeah. right? That's who a Gunter is.
Also, why was there a random Buckaroo Banzai reference that, I mean, there's more people that know what Atari is. Buckaroo Banzai is deep freaking cuts, man. Yeah. Why?
Was that in the book?
I don't remember.
It was just so ridiculously random of all the things they could have picked. You know, well, give him Marty McFly's outfit or, you know, there's any a number that of iconic 80s outfits.
He's got out the there. DeLorean already.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, there's any number of outfits out there, but they pick Buckaroo Banzai.
I can't remember if that's what he wears in the book or not. So maybe that's what it was.
Well, this is just a random nightclub. And in the book, that was supposed to be like this big birthday party ball or something, party. Right? Yeah.
And Ogden Moreau is supposed to. So Ogden's character is completely that's another thing is aside.
That I think was wasted. That probably Simon made Pegg more sense wasted. In the movie. Or in the book than it did in the movie, because there was no significance to Ogden being that guy. Like, I was like, why is it? I felt like this was supposed to be a big moment, but it really wasn't.
He was his former partner and the stealer of his first girlfriend.
Right. Well,
and,
I mean, like, they cover that in the movie for sure, but I just.
No. I mean, that's what he is in the movie. Yeah. He's not anything else.
Other than that, there's no significance.
But in the book, you find out that Ogden. So
no he's one, like a level 99 wizard and it just hasn't
and
played.
He's been slowly helping the High Five stave off IOI.
Because and he's the one that sends the birthday party invitations to the main characters. Yeah. I mean, I've heard all that about the movie or about the book.
Well, so he ends up like in the book, and I'm sorry if I ruined this for anybody.
He rescues them at the very end, and that's how they get together because they're all in different parts of the world, even.
Or country. Well, no, you're right. You're totally right.
Daito and Shoto are in Japan.
You're right.
I will say this, like, spoiler for the books, I'm really glad I didn't have to watch Daito die a really brutal death.
Or, like, a random sex scene, that would have been.
Well, but in the book, Daito, the way he dies like, is pretty intense.
Brutal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. IOI basically throws him out of a high-rise window, right, like, in the climax of the film.
Because they find it's like watching him when they throw the Canadian out.
Yeah.
So
it's recorded, you see him land. And
the whole you never tell anybody your real name thing, the way that happens in the book is intense, like, sabotage and hacking and illegal activity. He doesn't just slip and say his name in a nightclub, okay? It's a big deal when IOI finds out who Wade is. He's very careful about his identity. And so, basically, IOI, when they find out who these people are, they break into their places and try and murder them. And so they throw Daito out a window of a high-rise in Japan. You know, like, right there, they're all in the oasis, and he just dies. And that's how. Like, it's intense. The stakes are really intense. But Ogden's character, he saves all of them and gives them new rigs to use because they don't have any rigs left and, you know, or anything like that. And he's a very significant character in the book.
And he was just a deus ex machina in this.
Which really, I mean, he's Simon Pegg, and I love Simon Pegg. I was so excited.
We
when
all
they
love
cast
Simon
him.
Pegg.
The
so
most
much.
Shocking part was him having an American accent.
That was weird. That was so weird.
Do you guys think Ty Sheridan is now typecast into Cyclops roles?
Yes. Yes.
The two movies that I know him from, he's wearing a visor the entire movie. And even in this movie, they gave him, like, the little round things on the side of the headset.
I actually heard he's going to be Geordi.
I mean, that's the perfect casting. I mean, it might be whitewashing it a little bit, but I think everything else
No, because everybody
on
else is going to be a multicultural and different ethnicities, too.
I did not make that connection. That's hilarious. I think didn't even think about
he
it.
He has the perfect nose and lips, apparently, for being for being a character that wears a headset all the time.
The funny thing is that the character, Wade, still wears glasses, and he didn't in the comic, or in the book, so.
Did he not?
I don't think so.
That part I don't remember.
Oh, well.
I did really love the opening of this movie, though, when he's, like, dropping through all the things, and you see all the different people doing their stuff in VR. You see the one lady that's, like, a stripper or whatever, a dancer.
I was very helpful when I saw that, because that was cool. The stacks were really cool.
Yeah, the stacks are perfect. Yeah. That is exactly how they were.
That really set me up for, like, man, this is going to be awesome. But I still enjoyed it, but not fine. Awesome. It was less than what I thought it would be. But
the stacks were perfect. The IOI detention centers were basically more or less what I had in mind. They were actually probably even more intense than what I had in my head. I thought of it more of like a cubicle office building with like shackles. This was a little bit more updated. But the stuff in between You know,
I guess my issue is, like, I enjoyed the trailer more than I did the movie. And
the Willy Wonka theme really, like, sealed the deal for me. And I really got the vibe that this was a Willy Wonka story in the movie. Like, about a third of the way in, I was like, this is Willy Wonka. Which is fine. I love Willy Wonka, and I think doing something like this, I love video games. So, you know, kind of bringing that stuff in, I thought that was cool. And that maybe I'm giving it a little bit of a pass on things because, you know, I have a little bit more of a connection to the source. Not the source material, but what it's based in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I love all those things too. So I really, I wanted to enjoy it. And I didn't have a bad time watching it. You know, I thought I had tempered my expectations enough. And I guess I didn't.
I do want to ask you, Derek, because we do have another show on this network called Gamer Heroes, where we discuss video games and things.
Yes.
Do you think this will lead to an increase in virtual reality headsets or interest in virtual reality in general?
Well, I mean, I think that the timing is really solid because both HTC and Sony have lowered the prices and in HTC's case, introduced a lower cost model. So I think it's a perfect storm.
Which company do you think is going to come out with the bodysuit so that dudes can get hand jobs?
There's already a haptic bodysuit like in development. Like almost all of the technology. Somebody on Reddit went through and figured out all the technology and they actually had like links to everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, including like the omnidirectional treadmill thing and like haptic gloves. And obviously the headsets. HTC has now released a wireless adapter for their headset, so you don't have to have a cable or anything. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know if it's been released. So, I mean, do you think this is going to lead to an uptick?
I think it absolutely will. I think that with the cost of VR going down, games continuing to be released, and this being a pop culture thing, people will absolutely be going out and doing that. Now, maybe there would have been more of a tick if this had been closer to the holidays, and everyone would just be running out and buying PSVR for Christmas and whatnot. Yeah. Obviously that's going to temper down a bit in the next 6 months before the holiday season. But I definitely think that VR is going to become more popular over time anyway, and this was only going
to
help that.
Do you think that there's going to be a race for a company to come out with an Oasis style game?
I think that it's something that
some people already kind of have of the elements.
I mean, that's what an MMO was supposed to, like, that's the end goal of an MMO, right? Yeah. You're taking on a character and you're living in this giant expansive world where you can do anything within its boundaries. That's what the Oasis is. The Oasis is the culmination of what an MMO is supposed to be. I only think it's a matter of time before something like that exists. I think the Oasis, what it is, what the movie showed it to be, what the book showed it to be, is amazing, and I want that. IOI can screw off, but the Oasis, that's pretty cool. So we can only hope that the creators of it are somewhat altruistic, like Halliday and Ogden.
Like Blizzard and Nintendo.
Yeah. We had that conversation. If anybody in the near future is going to do it, I think it would take a partnership like Nintendo and Blizzard.
Or like HTC and Valve.
Maybe. I think you need two companies with an insane amount of imagination that do off-the-wall crazy things that don't follow the market. I think that's how you can do it and be successful. I mean, is it Valve? I mean, you mean Steam?
No, I mean Valve, the company. They're making a ton of VR stuff. They're making those knuckle controllers that you control your
fingers.
And
someone's going to have to make the peripherals for it. But the actual architecture of the Oasis, I think, has to come down to somebody more imaginative. If you look at what companies like Nintendo and Blizzard pump out, very few other companies come close to that type of unique experience. That's all I mean. Anybody can look at science fiction and come up with the kinds of peripherals that you need for VR.
Yeah, I mean, that company that came up with Portal and Half-Life, they don't have any creativity or imagination. Look,
most of those people are not at Valve anymore.
That's a fair point.
That was a different Valve.
That's true.
You know, that's the thing. Like, you're right. If it was that Valve, absolutely that would be part of the conversation. But that's just not who they are anymore. You know? And I'm not saying their business model is bad. I mean, look at what Steam has become. Right. Obviously,
they're making money.
Yeah, they've made good business decisions, and that's great. It's a different business. So
that's fair. We've gone way off topic.
We have. All right. So let's do our final grades, our letter grades here before we sign off for the evening.
D.
Okay.
Well, at least it's not an F.
No, it's not.
We have on here that Rotten Tomato gave it a 75%.
Yeah.
Metacritic gave it a 64, and IMDb gave it an 8.0. I'd probably be between Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb, like, I would probably give it like a 76 or a 77 maybe, but you know, that's probably biased from personal, you know, just because I like video game stuff. So, but yeah, I enjoy
it. I don't. I actually hope the entire medium goes under.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've never played one in my life.
Okay.
I'm not. I just have a big connection to it in my background. I wasn't implying that you didn't have any kind of connection.
You both did that to me earlier, so just getting you back for it. That's all.
I would give it like a C minus, maybe a 73% on the high side. It was fine. Like I said, I think it is entertaining. I think that kids will really enjoy it because the special effects are great.
Kids are going to buy the toys. At least Artemis and Parzival and H are going to have action figures, and they were cool looking. So, I mean, even from an aesthetic point of view, I'd probably buy them because
is there
they
a Ready Player Two? You guys think is there going to be a thing?
Yes, Ernest Cline is now writing the book, very similar to, you know, Neil Gaiman and Frank Miller.
Do you
Miller.
Think there's going
to
be a movie? I guess I should specify.
Yeah, it made enough money. There's no reason why it wouldn't.
I think it's too early to say that. At this time, it's barely made back its budget.
That's fine.
You know, so I think it depends. And that's worldwide.
I guess we'll have to see the drop-off next week and see how bad it is.
Yeah.
Now, there is a good cushion, right? Because April doesn't really have a ton of stuff. You've got Rampage,
until
of course.
Infinity War.
And then you've got Super Troopers 2 and then Infinity War. So, not a whole lot of serious competition until you get to Infinity War. And by then, it's been out for a month. So, if it's not going to make its money by then, it's not going to make its money, right?
Anyway, he's writing the book. And he wrote the screenplay for this with Zach Penn, so there's no reason why he wouldn't. I mean, Neil Gaiman and Frank Miller did the exact same thing after the movies went big. They started writing their sequels, so
yeah,
it's possible.
I mean, if the production company wants to greenlight a sequel, there'll be a sequel. It needs to make more money than this. It's too expensive to make that kind of money, you know. But from a toy perspective, I mean, if they want to give me a Back to the Future DeLorean with Ecto logos on it, awesome. You know, I will,
that'd be cool.
I will check that out, you know.
I'd buy it.
Right?
Gigantic Iron Giant.
Right, like, that's what, like, you know, some of the IP is cool stuff. You know, if this leads to some new Halo Master Chief action figures or something, so be it. You know?
What a shame that would be.
All right, well, then I think that's going to be it.
We're actually just going to get remastering of Adventure. Like, that's it.
Oh, yeah, one last thing.
Oh, God.
No, anybody who enjoys the old 80s style of games, it's not perfect by any means because I played around with it a little bit, but if you go to arcade.readyplayeronemovie.com, there is a little old school arcade browser with several different games, including Joust and Tapper, and some that are actually based on the movie events, including some car chase stuff and some other games. It's totally free. You can go play in your browser, and it's kind of fun. So I wanted to mention that.
Okay.
All right. Well, that is going to be it for us. What are we doing next week, Ray?
We are talking about our favorite TV pilots.
TV pilots. That should be interesting.
Yeah.
Ryan looks very excited.
Ryan's also never watched TV before.
No, so. I don't watch a lot of shows, so yeah. Other than the superhero crap that we watch all the time.
Oh, well, there's your list.
I guess that's what it's going to be.
Don't forget, you can join us live Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central at twitch.tv/heroespodcasts. And we are at Heroes Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can go to heroespodcasts.com as well. The show is on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Blog Talk Radio, and Spreaker, so you can find us pretty much anywhere that you can listen to a podcast, drop in the RSS feed, and what have you. I want to give a special thank you to all of our Patreon contributors. You guys are awesome. We really appreciate it. Significant shout-outs to Jordan, Doc Rev, and Trackboy. We appreciate you guys, our top three contributors, so thank you very much for all of your support. We will catch everybody next week. Thanks for tuning in.